It's been an amazing experience. It's been an amazing journey.
The racing's great. The racing's unpredictable.
It's been fantastic to be part of Formula E as well, you know, since it's grown from the very beginning back in 2014 when me and Jack both started.
Everybody's here to make it better. They're here to win, but they're also here to make Formula E better and to make the world better.
This is Inside E, the Porsche Formula E podcast.
Hi everyone, a warm welcome to the latest Inside E podcast. Great to have you with us. And yet again, we've got some fantastic people lined up to chat to, as I'm joined by two very special guests. So firstly, let's say hi to Formula E host and Pit Lane reporter Nikki Shields. Warm welcome, Nikki. How are you doing?
Thank you. I am really well, thank you. Yes, surviving lockdown, but all good. Very excited about chatting to you.
Oh, lovely to have you with us. Plus, we'll be speaking to Formula E commentator Jack Nicholls. Jack, thanks for joining me today. How are you doing?
No, I'm all good, really. Nikki sounds really happy, so that makes me happy. That's the way our sort of relationship tends to work, so I'm all good.
Delighted to hear that. I think there's going to be a lot of good bouncing off one another in this discussion. So, firstly, let's talk about how it all began, shall we? And I'll start with you, Nikki, because where does your huge passion for motorsport come from?
Well, I wish I had a more original answer to this question, but basically my dad. He was the one that got me into motorsport, you know, watching mainly Formula One, but British touring cars. We used to go to Brands Hatch quite a lot, watch racing, do a bit of go-karting together. So the passion, I think where he got his passion from was from his father. So it's kind of been passed down through the generations, really. And that's where it all started. So I kind of started off as a traditional petrol head, should we say, if I'm allowed to say that in the Formula E world.
Love that. Good old dad. And, exactly. You know, now combining presenting with motorsport, this is about what dreams are made of, really, combining your two passions.
Yes, dad doesn't like me very much anymore. he's rather envious when he sees me go to work, or what I call pretend to call a job. No, we're very, very lucky. I think anyone in there, you know, if you can combine your passion with your work, then I know it's a bit of a cheesy phrase, but I do genuinely believe it. It doesn't feel like you work a day in your life. So if you can find that thing, then do follow it, because it's been an amazing experience. It's been an amazing journey. It's been fantastic to be part of Formula E as well, you know, since it's grown from the very beginning back in 2014 when me and Jack both started. So I feel very fortunate to have been part of this journey.
So that's Nikki's kind of influences, you know, it all stems from her dad. But what about for you, Jack? What's your story? How did you get involved?
Well, it's not dissimilar, really. I used to watch the F1 with my dad when I was sort of, I think I was about 6 years old when I started watching it with him properly. Whether he got it from his dad, I don't actually know. That's quite an interesting question. I know that my granddad was at Le Mans in 1955 when the Le Mans disaster happened, but I don't know if he was like there for any reason or a big fan of motorsport. I don't actually know because I never met him. So, you know, I'm actually going to do some digging on that a little bit later on. And watching Formula One with my dad, and then I sort of got into it in an obsessive kind of way, which is kind of what I do. If I'm into something, I really get into something. And I started marshalling at like local tracks in the UK, and then started commentating at them. And then it all just kind of progressed from there while I was studying, basically. And here we are now.
You have worked in various forms of motorsport as a commentator, but I'm really interested to know how the Formula E opportunity specifically came about for you.
It was very much a right place, right time kind of thing. So I knew the TV company that won the contract to film it. I already worked with those guys on the FIA GT World Championship. So I was already working with them. And I was just lucky to be young at the right time. I think that was basically the end of the story, because I was, when I got the Formula E job, I was 23, and that kind of fitted with what they wanted in terms of, you know, a young, youthful, you know, Nikki was younger than now, obviously, because it was the past. My point is, you were also quite young. We were both quite young because they were looking for young people. I think, honestly, if Formula E was starting now and I'm 30 and Nikki's older than 6 years ago, would they go for us? I honestly don't know, because I think us being youthful was quite a big part of the appeal to just do something different, because I'd done a bit of motorsport for sure. I'd done a couple of F1 races and I'd done some GTs and I'd done some, but nothing as high profile as Formula E. And Nikki had done some cool stuff, but equally no motorsport at this level either. So I think it was right time, right place almost, and right age.
So Nikki, for you, you know, why did you decide to make the move into Formula E? Because, you know, let's be perfectly honest, no one really knew much about the series or the concept, did they, at that time?
No. And actually, if I'm completely honest, the way I originally found out about Formula E is I was actually doing a sustainability series, and we did a show, or actually it was a feature all about the future of electric cars. And this was maybe like, it must have been at least 8-9 years ago, when electric cars were really bad. And we went and interviewed Renault and talked about their kind of, you know, future in the world of electric vehicles. And they told us about this racing championship that they were involved in, Formula E. And, you know, at that point, no one had heard about Formula E. The cars, the electric cars on our roads were really quite basic. They were pretty slow and pretty hideous. So when I heard about Formula E, I was a bit skeptical and kind of said, oh, well, you know, good luck. I'll look forward to watching it. And then and kind of went home and didn't really think too much of it. And then sort of maybe a couple of days later, I was like, well, actually, hang on a minute. If they say those electric race cars are going to be as fast as they say they are, and they are going to, races in city centres with zero emission cars, basically it's a sustainable racing series, maybe it actually is pretty awesome. And it kind of combines my two passions into one, which is motorsport, which was very much just a passion, a hobby, never ever crossed my mind to really work in that space. And then on the other side, it was the sort of the science and sustainability, which is what I was doing in broadcasting. So it kind of, the two worlds collided and it just seemed like the right thing to do.
And it's just going from strength to strength as a series, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I'm intrigued to know then, Formula E race day, what's it like? A typical day for you, Nikki? No doubt full on.
Mental.
I was trying to be diplomatic there.
But by the time I get to the end of the day, I am so frazzled. But I'll talk you through it. So normally it starts horribly early, and I am not a morning person. I really dislike getting up early.
You're fine.
Thanks, Jack. Don't ask Jack to comment on what I'm like at the end of the day, particularly after one glass of champagne. We'll save that for the end of the podcast. we'll start off. Normally the alarm goes at sort of 4:45 sometimes.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, and I'm terrible at going to bed early the night before. So you basically had maybe 4-5 hours sleep if you're lucky. And you're already knackered because you've done about 3 or 4 days of like pretty intense work. And then it's normally send a WhatsApp to Jack saying, oh God, I'm late. Wait for me to get the bus.
That's so true. We're always going to meet at breakfast about 15 minutes before the bus departs. And then I've
never
been there
happens.
At breakfast. But no, exactly. Okay. No, I'm there. But
fair play, Jack.
Jack's brilliant. Jack's always on time. I'm always 10 minutes late, whatever the time. although I do know, not really with the bus, because that will just go without me. It doesn't matter who you are, they will just go without you. So usually, yes, I'm sort of pacing it down to the bus. Then we get to the track at, must be about, what time do we get to track? About 7. And then, and then it's a day of intense racing, because of course, Formula E being the one race day format, we have the two practice sessions, qualifying, and then the race. And so I'm kind of hanging about in the pit lane, wandering up and down the garages, trying to sort of work out what the stories are, feeding back information to Jack or Dario in the commentary box or to our producers, or doing interviews. And then sometimes in between the sessions, we have to film extra links or pieces to camera. Particularly, I also do a show for CNN called Supercharged. So whilst also doing the host broadcast, I also have to film bits for them as well. And then the race kind of kicks off. Normally our race show is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, by which point you're already knackered, but the best part of the day hasn't even started yet. And then it really is about just getting to the drivers and trying to speak to them and get the insights out of them and, you know, interviewing some of the good and the great who have come to a Formula E race as well. You know, we usually have a few celebs on the grid. And then obviously we have the race and then it's more interviews afterwards. And we normally finish about 6:30 in the evening. So it's a good on, 12 hours of full on work.
So I've got this image of you racing after the bus, and I've got this image of Jack quietly having his coffee at breakfast, reading over his commentating notes. That's the image I've got of you two. But Jack, I mean, talking about commentary for Formula E, it must be very different. There is an intensity, which we've already, you know, alluded to with Nikki, but you know, from your perspective and your role, again, very, very full on.
Yeah, I never have notes at breakfast. That's okay. Something that I can quash, and I don't like coffee. So that little image you've got going
on, it completely wrong, haven't I? Really?
Yeah, I'm usually sitting there on my phone eating Cocoa Pops. Is kind of how it usually goes. But yeah, it's less intense for me than for Nikki, simply because of the nature of the job. When we're on air, as Nikki says, she's running around getting interviews, speaking to drivers. You've got to go to that garage. You've got to go to that garage. You've got to go up here. You've got to go present the show from down there. I have my little commentary box with a chair and a telly and
Air conditioning.
And air conditioning. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
like
very
100
true.
100 degrees. Outside.
Luxury.
Exactly. What was it, Sanya, in last season or the season before last, where it's, I don't 90 know.
90% humidity.
Yeah.
Oh, that is tough.
That was.
To be fair, even the aircon was struggling with that, but it was better than not having it. So, yeah. So I sit and then I do my commentary and then in between the sessions, go out, have a sort of fairly calm wander around the pit lane to speak to people and learn things. And yeah, I don't really get too frantic. There's not really anything particularly frantic about my job. It's sort of full on and it's long and you're constantly thinking of things to say and wondering where to sort of take the narrative of the race and all of those kind of things that are on the job. But in terms of physical rushing around or anything like Nikki has to deal with, I'm pretty lucky, to be honest. I get to the end of the day and I'm a little tired just from thinking, but I'm not physically tired, I think, which is a difference. So I'm very fortunate on that front. It's hectic and it's busy and it's a lot of stuff to do, but my stuff to do is easier than Nikki's stuff to do, basically.
Going back to the making notes, was it until about season three you actually made your first note?
No, it's all coming out now, isn't it? No, I knew as soon as you said that, I knew that I was going to get stitched up on this one. I go in and out of notes. I start strongly with notes at the start of the season, like the first race. I'm like, I've got to do all my notes, and I do all my notes. Then as the races go by, I realise I'm never looking at my notes. And so then I decide, well, what's the point in doing my notes? And it's, you end
to
up,
be fair,
when you live in when you live in Formula E, when you're there all the time, there's almost nothing you don't know. But like, apart from literal figures and stats, that's kind of it. Everything else is just kind of stored in your head, you know?
That's what I was
that is
say.
The secret. That is
you
a
have
secret.
A very
having
good
a
memory.
Kind of yeah, good memory to store all those little vignettes and little special pointers. Because I was going to ask you. I mean, you were quite humble when you said, you know, you were in the right place at the right time when you got this opportunity. But you know, you've been involved in quite a long time now, so you're obviously doing a lot right, can I say? But for any of those young aspiring journalists who would love to be in your shoes, what advice would you give to them?
The key thing, I think, in life is just to try and do things that you enjoy. And by default, you'll end up doing something you enjoy. I get a lot of people come to me and say, oh, I'm really jealous of your job. Oh, yeah. Oh, it just sounds, you know, it sounds amazing. Oh, I didn't know you like racing cars. Oh, no, I don't. And you're like, well, then you don't want my job. You're not jealous of my job. A day where you have to commentate on a six-hour endurance race for GT cars, you would hate that because you don't like racing cars. But what they mean is they are sort of jealous, or I'm very lucky to be working in something that I sort of enjoy and have a passion for. And I think that's my number one advice, really, is just try and work out your passion. I was lucky that I sort of figured mine out quite young, to be perfectly honest. And I know that a lot of people don't know what it is for a long period of time. But if you can go through your life only doing things that you enjoy, and you know, in most of the time, let's say, I know it's not always possible, and it's the same for me, I can't just do fun things all the time, but then you're going to end up doing things that you enjoy. If you don't enjoy something, even if you think you want to do it and then you do it and you don't enjoy it, then you have to stop pursuing it because you're not going to achieve it. And I'm sure Nikki's done jobs that you go, oh, okay, that sounds fun, and then you do it and you're like, ah, okay, that's not, like, for me, presenting is not something I'm interested in. You give it a go and it's a really cool job, and you like, Nikki's job is super cool, she adores it, it's not for me. And it's finding those little the sort of niche, what exactly you want to do is the real tricky part of it.
From a fan's perspective, there is genuinely such a good vibe within the series. And obviously, Nikki, your rapport with the drivers and everything just adds to, shall we say, you know, the entertainment from a fan's perspective, what we're watching, because that rapport really is pivotal, isn't it, in the narrative and in covering a series such as this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's hopefully what we get across, you know, that we get the kind of inside scoop. And, you know, over the course of the years, obviously, we've got to know the drivers really well and the teams and how to navigate through the tough times, maybe when they don't necessarily want to speak to you and have a camera or a microphone thrust in their face. But we're kind of, as I say to the drivers, like, we're here for the good times and the celebrations, but also the bad times. So you have to do this interview now, which doesn't always go down that well.
Yeah, and that is the difficult part when you're trying to create such a lovely rapport, and, you know, all the drivers are going, everyone gets along and we're all mates, and oh, ha ha, what a laugh it is to be in Formula E. But then you have to
ask the hard questions,
be accountable. Yeah, you have to be accountable sort of as a journalist. So if a driver does something bad, I, or more so Dario Franchitti, my co-commentator, has to say that was bad. And so then, you know, on occasion you get accosted in the paddock with a driver shouting at us, why did you say that about me? And we have to say, well, because you drove like an idiot, and they don't like that. And then you end up in an argument. But so it's really difficult to get that line of rapport, but also we're not just sort of sugarcoating everything, you know.
No, exactly.
You've got to take the good times with the bad times, haven't you? You know, when it's, yeah, that's really important.
And I think they get that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all professional. I'm intrigued to get your thoughts on this, guys, because it's been, shall we say, a very, very strange year. And you both worked on the Race at Home Challenge from April to June. So firstly, how have you guys coped with the virtual world we're all experiencing, but also working on digital races? If I can start with you, Jack, I'd love to get your thoughts on how it's been.
Well, it's how I started my career. So when I was at uni, I started doing the e-racing, just like driving myself, racing myself. for fun, and then they broadcast some of these e-races, so I started commentating on them in about 2008, and I did that for 2 or 3 years before then going into the real world of commentating. So for me, it's been really, really nice to go back to that. And I was commentating on some people in the Race at Home Challenge who I'd commentated on in 12 years ago, and I'd known these guys for a long, long time, and they'd then become some of the best sim racers in the world. So for me, it was not a change at all, to be honest. It got, you know, and we had the Visa Vegas e-race in Formula E in, I think, season 2 or season 3, something like that. So it was really, really just like the old times for me. So I had no trouble with it. I loved it.
Okay. What about you, Nikki, though? A little bit different, you know, that kind of different element of interaction, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, I've absolutely loved it. Like the way that sim racing managed to pretty much fill a huge gap, because obviously when we had the first lockdown, no sport was happening whatsoever. And sim racing and esports was about the only thing that we had left to watch. So the fact that the Race at Home Challenge came along was just brilliant. And also, you know, massive credit to Formula E, because it maybe took them a little bit of time to get together, but actually they managed to get pretty much all the Formula E drivers doing it, which I don't think any other racing championship managed. You know, to get the full driver involved was huge. And bearing in mind, you've got to get them sim, rigs, all the equipment to wherever they are in isolation around the world. Then you've got the connectivity issues. Then you've actually got to get them there. You know, most of these drivers are quite difficult to pin down at the best of times. And that's normally when they've got a PR standing next to them, making sure that they're doing what they're told. But when they're at home, you know, they're maybe slightly difficult or slightly harder to actually organise and make sure that they turned up for things. But they did a really, really good job, and the racing was great. I think some of the drivers have got a little bit of improvement to be making in the world of sim racing. but it was a great sort of spectacle, and great to chat to some of the drivers as well, you know, because we hadn't really seen them and everyone was at home alone. And so it just kind of brought the whole community together and gave us something to all get excited about. I'd say it was a big success, and I really hope that we get to do some more of it at some point.
Yeah, it really worked, didn't it? I mean, we've mentioned earlier on in a chat, you know, you've been working on Formula E since the start, but it really is quite remarkable how much it's developed as a series. Nikki, if I can start with you, are you surprised by how the series has evolved over the years?
I think when we first started, no one quite knew what we were getting ourselves in for. I mean, even I remember that first race we had in Beijing, September 2014, and we turned up to the race thinking, I'm not even sure that this is going to go ahead, because there were still so many things that, you know, had to happen to make the racing go ahead. But we pulled off the first race, and from that moment onwards, we were all sort of like, oh, okay, well, we've done the first race. Maybe this has actually got some legs, because, you know, we all started, it was very much this startup vibe, and we loved that about Formula E. You know, we loved being part of it at the beginning. You know, it meant we were this very sort of tight-knit family. We weren't part of a massive organisation that had been running for donkey's years, and we just had to make it work. So I think there was a huge unknown at the beginning, but yeah, I think if someone was to say where we are today back then, I'm not sure we would have all believed us. Massive credit to Formula E and the organisers, and to Alejandro Gag, to getting it where it is today as well. And I just really hope that given current situations with the pandemic, that we can, you know, have a sort of season 7, which is going to be the first season when it's a world championship, which is huge, huge for the sport. Yeah, that it is now an FIA-sanctioned world championship, that we can, you know, make that season 7 the season it should be.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, Jack, for you, what makes Formula E so special?
It is the travelling circus feel to it. And whilst, you know, that description goes to a lot of series. The thing you have in Formula E, maybe even the biggest thing, is the catering. And I like food a lot, don't get me wrong, but it's not for the food. But every person in the Formula E paddock eats in the same catering tent. So no matter what's happened on track, no matter who's racing for who, no matter who's left which team, no matter, everybody's eating in the same catering tent. The drivers are sitting with their other driver mates. They're sitting over there. So often in motorsport, everybody just goes to their team hospitality. You know, in the World Endurance Championship, in Formula One, if you're driving for a manufacturer, they've got their own hospitality there, and that's where you go and eat. Not in Formula E. Everybody spends this time together. And that's what I think, that's one of the biggest factors that creates that unity, because you don't go through the whole day only seeing your team and the people you work with. You mix with the whole paddock, and it creates that camaraderie. And I think that comes across not in a definable way, but in just a feeling that comes across when you're watching Formula E, and when you're seeing it as part of the paddock. You see drivers having a laugh with each other that you don't really see in other series, like drivers from different teams having a laugh with each other. And I think it kind of all stems from that. That to me is why it gives off such a good vibe. The racing's great, the racing's unpredictable, and all of that is true, but it's that sort of immeasurable quality of camaraderie and all being in it together and all working for the same goal as well. Because Formula E started how Nicky described, everybody's here to make it better. They're here to win, but they're also here to make Formula E better and to make the world better. And that's a very, very rare thing in sport, is that despite the competition, you're working together towards a common goal actively.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself.
Also got to add to that as well. I think it's helped, of course, that the electrification, you know, the world of EVs has massively grown as well. And with that has brought some big manufacturers into Formula E. You know, if the adoption of electric vehicles hadn't taken off, then obviously Formula E wouldn't be where it is now. But fortunately, it has just grown hugely. It's growing exponentially at the moment.
I think that's you're right about the perfect timing, because so the car launch was 2013 at the Frankfurt Motor Show, and I went along to do some little videos and bits and bobs. And I was still fairly skeptical about Formula E, and you get there, and I'd never been to the Frankfurt Motor Show before, but walking around, suddenly you're like, oh, you know what? There are a couple of electric cars here. You know, some of the big manufacturers were showcasing their latest electric cars. Not many, but enough that actually the majority was kind of going electric. And it really, Formula E really hit that peak of perfect timing. I think if it started now, it would be too late. If it started any earlier, it would be too early.
Well, you look around at how many other electric racing championships there are now. Or they're trying to be anyway. Whereas, yeah, when Formula E started, it was one of a kind.
Guys, I need to talk to you now about Porsche specifically, because, of course, hugely significant season, debut season. Jack, I'd like to get your expert knowledge, but how would you rate Porsche's debut season then in the series?
I think it was really impressive. I think Porsche had comfortably the most impressive debut season of any manufacturer. There is an argument that this was Mercedes' debut season. For me, they had pretty much had a year under their belt, because they ran under HWA for season 5. And that's not to discredit anything they've done at all, but Porsche coming in as a brand new entry, a podium in their first race in Diria with André Lotterer, was really remarkable. And throughout the season, André was qualifying very well. And okay, it never sort of quite came together in terms of a overall race win, but I don't think that was really something you could hope for in your first season in Formula E, to be honest, in such a competitive field where experience is so important. I think André and his engineer that he brought over from Techita, I think they were the only two people in the entire Porsche team that had any Formula E experience. I don't think anybody else in the team had done anything with Formula E before. So that level of learning curve was always going to be tough. And I think they succeeded unbelievably well, to be honest, especially looking so strong at the end in Berlin. Okay, maybe the middle of the season was a little bit, finding our feet, where are we? But at the start of the year and the end of the year, it was mightily impressive.
And Nikki, there were a number of kind of key highlights. I mean, for you, what was the highlight in terms of Porsche's success?
I mean, I think it's got to be that first podium in the first race with André Lotterer. When you're joining Formula E, it's fine, you know, in the first couple of seasons because all the teams were establishing themselves. But once you join so far on, once the championship has been so well established, it's really hard to hit the ground running. So I think that was just outstanding for André Lotterer to be in P2 on the first race in Saudi Arabia was, history in the making, I think.
And I think pole position in Mexico City for me was really impressive as well, because and André didn't in Diria, but you can luck into a podium or a win to a certain amount in Formula E, but you can't really luck into pole positions. We saw that in Berlin at the end of the season with Da Costa and Vern's dominance of the poles. So I thought that first Porsche pole in Mexico was mightily impressive as well.
Jack, it's something that Nikki touched on a short while ago in the chat about, you know, the amount of manufacturers now involved in the series. But of course, Porsche is such an iconic motorsport brand. You know, to get these heavyweights involved, it really has helped, hasn't it, with the profile of the series?
Absolutely. And I think also the Porsche in single-seater racing is not really a thing. I think that's what makes it so cool for me, because as much as GT racing's cool, sports cars, yeah, great, they're not really for me. I'm a single seater person, and I don't know why that is, but GTs and sports cars has never really held a huge amount of excitement for me. Obviously it's great and I watch it, and Le Mans incredible, all of those kind of things, but I see single seaters as sort of the pinnacle of motorsport, I suppose. And yeah, Porsche have had history in Formula One as a engine manufacturer, but to bring all of that iconic Porsche racing history to Formula E is something that's really, really cool.
Totally iconic. Yeah, cool, like that. Guys, we've been through quite a tough time. The world has faced challenging times this year, but I guess sometimes you can look at challenges and you can see potential opportunities. So what are your thoughts kind of moving forward? We've spoken already about the success of going digital. Can you envisage more of that? More digital, more sim racing?
Definitely. I think we'll see more of that. But one of the things I was going to say, I think that one of the great things to come out of this current situation is what we've realised how much we can do remotely. So we are going to now, going forward at Formula E races, a lot of our TV production particularly is going to be run remotely. And that means that we're reducing the sort of number of people on the ground by about half, I think. I mean, obviously, you know, some of us have to be there, like myself, can't really do that remotely. I'm going to have to be in the pit lane. But a lot of the teams production can be done remotely. And I think that is a massive game changer, because all of a sudden, Formula E will save money, but the biggest issue, of course, is travelling and flying to these places. So if we can save the number of flights and the carbon footprint, then I think that's a huge win and something that we've learnt over the course of this whole pandemic.
Jack, for you, what do you feel about the future now moving forward?
For me, the main thing is fans at racetracks, I think. Because overall, fans at a football game or a soccer game, it loses a lot, you know, not having fans in the stadium. It's okay, and I still watch it, but it loses a lot. Motorsport isn't really affected by that to a huge degree, because most of the time you can't really hear the crowd and you're kind of watching the cars and it's all right. But I think for Formula E's sort of progress and for it's about, you know, one of the core principles is bringing the racing to the city centres. So bringing the cars to the people. And I think on that context, it'll be sad if we can't, or depending on what the situation happens with fans, that could be a shame. And I guess, to be honest, in all forms of life, we don't really know what the future holds. So I like the remote working, like Nikki says, I think is going to be important. And I think that's going to change things. But what the long term effects will be in motorsport, I've really no idea.
Yeah, and that element of engagement as well, which is so important with the fans. But let's be positive, looking ahead for a bright future, because before we know it, fingers crossed, season 7 will be with us. What are your thoughts then, guys, going into season 7? Bigger, better, bolder? I mean, if you look at a graph of Formula E, I always think it just goes, you know, up and up and up and up. And it's just, I think the future looks bright and exciting.
I really hope so. It's a really tough one because at the moment, obviously, we haven't got the full calendar confirmed yet. And we're very much in the hands of this pandemic at the moment, kicking off in Santiago and then going to Saudi Arabia. It's going to be a brilliant first 4 rounds. But the rest of the calendar is still provisional. So fingers crossed it will be bigger and better. But to be honest, massive credit to Formula E as well. When they organised Berlin, I honestly came into that thinking 6 days of racing. Oh, I'm really not sure. Is this really going to work? How are we going to do this? We're going to be exhausted by the time we get to the end of it. Is there going to be enough to talk about? And actually, it turns out it was brilliant. So I think there is always a way around these, you know, problems. And that 6 days of racing actually was so much fun. We had so much to talk about. There was a brilliant championship fight. And it was, it couldn't have ended better, to be honest. So it was a really nice way to end it. So I would say that, fingers crossed, the provisional calendar is all confirmed. But if not, I'm sure Formula E will come up with some inventive ways of recreating it.
Yeah, it was a thrilling conclusion. It was absolutely brilliant. What about then, Jack? We've spoken, of course, about Porsche making its debut last season. But, you know, how do you think they're going to fare in the second season with that kind of element of experience now under the belt, the team's belt?
There aren't many teams that you can say won't be title contenders. I think that's the most difficult part about Formula E. So Porsche, especially with Pascal Wehrlein joining, who's an incredibly talented driver. André Lotterer was great last year. You have to look at them as title contenders, but the competition is just so steep that it's really, really, really impossible almost to know. And I think it's surely going to be a season where it'll go down to the final round. Da Costa wrapped it up a little early in Berlin, didn't go quite down to the wire, but I can't see that happening again. I can't see, in a field like this where we've had sort of basically the same regulations for a few years and people are bringing in different drivetrains at different times of the season, and I think it's really going to be a mixed up year. And you have to consider Porsche as one of the favorites, to be honest. If that's what they can do when they come in at the start of the season for their first Formula E race ever and finish in second position, you can't rule them out of a title fight.
And Nikki, that's the joy of this series with so many different winners. I'm not going to even ask you guys to predict who's going to win the driver and team championship titles because, you know, you haven't got a crystal ball and it is so hard. But that, from a narrative point of view, that is what's so thrilling about this series, is that, talk about mixing it up, the drama, you know, it's just phenomenal, really, from a fan's perspective.
Oh, brilliant from a fan's perspective. Brilliant for us as well as journalists, because, you know, there is just always so much excitement. We can never, our predictions are always wrong. you know, you look at the champions over the years as well. We've only had one double champion, which is Jean-Éric Vergne. It's always been a different champion. So it's just been a fantastic journey. And as you say, every year throws up new competition, so it is virtually impossible to make predictions. Although, having said that, I would always say there is that phrase, the cream always rises to the top. And those drivers that, you know, like the Sebastian Buemis or the Lucas Degrassis or the Jean-Eric Vergnes, they're always kind of up there. So they're always the drivers to look out for.
Well, I, for one, cannot wait for the season to get underway. Guys, thank you so much for your time today. It's been absolutely brilliant chatting to you both. I wish you well for the season ahead. Keep us entertained and informed, won't you? Keep up the good work. And thanks again for joining us on Inside E.
No worries. Thanks
very
for having
much,
us.
Sam.
If you'd like more information, follow Porsche Formula E on Twitter and Instagram, or visit the Porsche newsroom. See you next time.
Inside E, Porsche Formula E podcast.